murky world of London in the 19th century. And any of you who have read the novels of Dickens will be well aware of what a grim face many people considered it was. And I have here a few interesting quotations relating to London during that period, such as Shelley's quotation, the hell is a city much like London. Ruskin referring to the great foul city of London, and Hippolyte Taine saying that nothing here is natural. And you can also see here the print by Gustave Doré, a French engraver, which is a notorious piece of art depicting the London of that time and the grim terraces under the railway arch. On a slightly lighter note, perhaps the more positive aspect of this is Dr. Samuel Johnson's quote, "When a man is tired of London, he is tired of life, for there is in London all that life can afford." And in the story of the Bell Maps, that particularly comes out. Yes, here we can see St. Leonard's Shoreditch, which, after the move from Hackney, was the parish church of the Bell Maps. Generations of Bell Maps were baptised, married and buried here in the 19th century. On the left you have an engraving of the church, beautiful 18th century church built by George Stans the Elder in the 1730s. And on the right is the parish stocks and whipping post, which is still there, although not used as it, perhaps, as it would have been in the Bell Maps time. And here we can see the interior of the church, and on the right, the font in which those generations of Bell Maps were baptised. All very much well preserved, and you have a very good idea of what it was like during their time. Well, the next generation, well, we skipped the generation of John, born in 1755. His son was Robert William Bell Map, who was born in about 1785, lived in Shoreditch, and is variously described in censuses as a cabinet maker, box maker, or trunk maker. And you can see in this picture the sort of profession that he had. It was a skilled profession, like a butcher, but possibly a notch down. He is also recorded as a private watchman in court records from the time, but more of that later. He married Mary Berry, who had already been married, and her maiden name was Whiteman, and that was in 1819 in Christchurch, Spitalfields, which is very near Shoreditch. And they had two sons, which we know of, Robert William Edward, who we're descended from, born in 1820, and Charles William. And he died at quite a young age of 54, on the 16th of July, 1839, buried at Shoreditch. And here we have a very interesting reference, a sort of human story relating to the Bell Maps in London. And I've already mentioned that Robert William Bell Map was a private watchman. And this is how we know, because the records of the Old Bailey, the main criminal court in London, are survived and fully searchable, and we found him giving a witness statement in a trial. And it was a murder trial. Basically, what happened was, on the 15th of March 1835, Police Constable John Wright Baldock attempted to murder Francis Brown, a fellow police officer under the influence of drink. And Robert Belknap appeared as a witness in the trial at the Old Bailey on the 6th of April, and this is the testimony he gave, the very words he spoke. "I am a private watchman of Holywell Lane. I remember this Sunday at 4 o'clock in the morning, I saw the prisoner in Holywell Lane. He asked me if I had seen Sergeant Brown. I told him I had. He asked me which way he went. I told him on the next man's beat. He said that then he would wait for his coming back. I told him he had better go around his beat. He said nothing to that. I asked what was the matter. He said Sergeant Brown had taken him to the station house and reported him drunk. I said, never mind, you had better go around your beat. He said no, he would wait till he saw Sergeant Brown, and then he would give it to him. With an oath, I said, you had better go round your beat. He made no reply. I turned round and left him at the corner of the lane. In about 5 minutes, I heard something pass between Brown and the prisoner, and two or three more police constables, but I did not go to them." And on the basis of this testimony, Baldock was found guilty and sentenced to death.
He's right back here.
And here we can see places in which the Belknaps lived during that period. We can garner their addresses from various civil registration documents and censuses. The actual houses in which they lived did not survive, but there are some things from the period. We visited these addresses in East London. And on the right you see King John Court, where they lived for many years, was under a railway arch, as in that print I showed you earlier. The next generation from Robert William Belknap was Robert William Edward Belknap. He is the last male Belknap in England. With him, the male line of the Belknaps in England died out. He was born on the 24th of September, 1820, baptised at Shoreditch, and he had various professions given him, the different documents. He's variously described as a paper seiner, costermonger, of which more later, colour maker, general dealer, and finally, gentleman. He married Milgrave Sarah Dunnett in 1838, but he had several other marriages. He married four times in total. Second wife was a matchmaker named Emma, third Mary Ann Webb in 1892, and then just a year later, a Sarah Leach. And he had nine children in total, three of which died in infancy, which was a very common fate for children in London at that time. He died on the 9th of March, 1897, age 76, and we'll come to that later. And here we have our oldest Belknap document. We are the repository for the English Belknap family papers. And this is actually a marriage certificate of Robert William Belknap, made in 1839, just 2 years after marriage certificates have been introduced in England. And amazingly, it is stuck on the back of a matchbox to preserve it. Possibly this is related to the fact his second wife was a matchmaker. But that's what they had to preserve this very valuable document. And we can also see that at least some of the people here were illiterate. Certainly Robert Belknap, you can see on the right, gave his mark instead of his signature. And here is another Belknap document from the same period, the baptism of Anne Elizabeth Belknap, who we're descended from, in 1843, a copy made for legal purposes in 1884. And here we have the third marriage of Robert William Edward Belknap to Mary Ann Atkinson, who was formerly Webb. She had been married three times before as well. And you can see here, this is where he gives his rank or profession as gentleman. And he's also given his mark here, so we can tell that he, at that time, towards the end of the 19th century, was actually illiterate as well. And this is a picture from a famous work called Mayhew's London Life and Labour, of what the costermonger looked like. Because for most of his life, Robert William Edward Belknap was a costermonger. And a bit of background on what the last male Belknap in England spent his life doing. He was a costermonger, which meant he was a street seller of fruit and vegetables, and they are well known for their loud and distinctive street cries. We have a rather damning assessment here from the certain John Camden Hotham in 1859, who reproved them for their low habits, general improvidence, love of gambling, total want of education, disregard for lawful marriage ceremonies, and the use of a peculiar slang language. Although that might have been a generalisation. And the character of costermongers was a sort of popular character in the music halls of the time, popularised by such comedians as Albert Chevalier and Gus Ellen, and we have a piece of sheet music there of that nature called The Coster Mansion. I won't perform it for you, but it reflects the pretensions of certain costermongers for saying that he lives in a mansion, and perhaps that's related to the fact that Robert Belknap decided to call himself a gentleman. There is a rather sadder side to this tale, of course, because the Belknaps actually ended up in the workhouse I don't know whether there were similar institutions in America at the time, but certainly in Britain, workhouses were notorious places. And we find him in the Shoreditch Workhouse in the 1861 census. These were state institutions for the relief of the poor and unemployed. They were provided by the parish or a board of guardians, and they gave very basic food and accommodation. Life in the workhouse was intentionally harsh and uninviting. Able-bodied inmates were given hard labour such as stone breaking or picking oakum, which is basically picking apart old ropes. Families were split up, so the Belknaps would have been in separate wards, and parents only permitted to see their children 1 hour on Sunday afternoon. And you can see the picture at the top there is the workhouse that Robert Belknap would and his family would have been in at the time of the 1861 census. And that was built in 1777. The workhouse was rebuilt in 1863, and that building still stands today. That's the one at the bottom, although since he wasn't in the workhouse at the next census, we don't know whether he was ever in that building. But certainly if he stayed until 1863, he would have been. And it still functions not as a workhouse, but as a hospital today. Here we have a map of that area of London, just to give you an idea of the area in which the Belknaps functioned at that time. We have the red circles around the residences of the Belknaps, so you can see in very close proximity. We have St. Leonard's Church, where so many of them were baptized, married, and buried. At the right, St. Matthew's Church, Bethnal Green, in which fewer were baptized, married, and buried. And right at the top, circle, not that one, the other one.
Which one's right?
Yes, that one is the workhouse, showing its location in relation to the church. And we have some more places where the Belknaps lived during this period. Unfortunately, again, we don't have the exact addresses surviving, but we do have houses of the same period in the same streets in which they lived. And we photographed these quite recently. The 1871 census records that the Belknaps were living in Wheeler Street, Spitalfields, and that is that street today on the left. And on the right is where they lived in Boundary Street in 1891. And that gives you a very good idea of the sort of accommodation that they had during that period.
I'm going to give Nicholas a break, just for a little moment, which is to think, why did the Belknaps actually die out completely as a name on the other side of the Atlantic? And this is a little bit unscientific, because I've just taken it from searching censuses on ancestry, rather than actually making sure that every Belknap is there. But we've done all variant spellings. And if we do that for the censuses which survive for the UK from 1841 through to 1901, we can see a very strange thing. Now, there may be someone here who understands the propensity or the possibility of having male or female children and can try and explain this to us. If there's someone here with some medical knowledge of that, it would be really fascinating. But what we have here is a very strange situation, I think, because in blue we have the total number of Belknaps listed of any age, simply alive, in those years. So in 1841 we have 5 Belknaps alive in the UK, at least listed in the census. There may be 1 or 2 more that don't get into the documents. By the time we're in 1861, we have 15 Belknaps alive in the UK. And interestingly, the red bar shows the number of those that were females. So that even in 1841, out of the 5 Belknaps, 4 were female. By the time we're in 1861, we have 15 Belknaps, of whom 11 are female, and clearly, therefore, although there must be other Belknap descendants in England, probably very many of them, the fact is that they declined to the point that in 1901, there at the Belknap surname doesn't exist at all in the UK. Nicholas has been looking for current Belknaps, haven't you? And maybe you should just say something about that. But their propensity for girl children means that that's why the name in the 19th century is why the name came to an end by 1901.
And an exhaustive search for any Belknaps left in the United Kingdom, which I undertook, found only one, and he's a Canadian. So there's certainly no English Belknaps, and we are the closest thing to it. As you can see in this family tree, at the top we have Robert William Edward Belknap, costermonger, and then we are actually descended from two of his daughters. It's what I'm told they call a collapsing pedigree. And that is because my great-great-grandfather, James Thomas Flowerday, in 1898 married Sarah Entwistle, and they were both the children of female Belknaps. So that is why we call ourselves double Belknaps, because we have the double Belknap genes as a result of that particular anomaly. And you can see how the family tree from the Belknaps goes down to us. I'm the great-great-great-great-grandson of Robert William Edward Belknap. As you can see there, right at the bottom, Graham Peter Dixon, Nicholas Andrew Dixon, that is the two of us. And that is our basis for believing that we are the closest things to English Belknaps that is possible to find. And here is a cemetery, Manor Park Cemetery, which is very near where we live. We have a grave of one of the Belknaps who we're descended from, Milgro S. Entwistle, otherwise known as Amelia Sarah Entwistle. Milgro and Amelia were pretty interchangeable. And she married an Entwistle, and we have an actual grave there. Interestingly, Thomas Entwistle, who she married, she died in 1910, by the way, but Thomas Entwistle, who she married, died in 1936, aged 86, and she was my grandmother's great-grandfather, and amazingly, my grandmother can still remember him very well, and I think that is an astonishing link with the past that we are fortunate to possess. And here we have the burial card of the final male line English Belknap. Robert William, this is our Edward, it's Robert William Edward Belknap, died May the 9th, 1897, aged 77 years, buried in Manor Park Cemetery. And there's a little Victorian poem there, gone from us but not forgotten, never shall thy memory fade, sweetest thought shall ever linger round the spot where thou art laid. And where he is laid, according to here, is grave number 164, square 61, and we visited that very spot. And in the next photograph, you can see it there. Unfortunately, his grave is not there, and the grave that was there was put there in the 1970s. It appears that his headstone was removed because no family could be contacted. But we do believe that he is still buried there, albeit with someone on top of him. We're now going to move on to, I think, an aspect of this presentation which you'll find particularly interesting, which is that my grandmother, Mrs. Irene Dixon, who is the closest thing to a Belknap, even closer than us, unfortunately, she's in her 80s and she couldn't be with us at this reunion, but she has really wanted to record a message for you at the reunion from the other side of the Atlantic as a gesture of goodwill, and we have that, and we recorded this message to play for you. So I hope that you enjoy it.
As you all gather together in Eden, we send greetings to all the Belknap family. You may be very surprised to learn that until 5 years ago, we had never heard that there was a surname Belknap. When our son and grandson, Graham and Nicholas, started to do family research, we discovered that my two great-grandmas were Belknaps. This was astonishing, as it solved a mystery. We had always wondered why my aunt had chosen such a very unusual title for her bungalow. I really wonder why we never asked her. Our own wild guess was that Belknap was a cutting of Bell, French for beautiful, and the English word nap being a peaceful little sleep. So combined, they suggest a beautiful, sleepy, restful place to live in. I'm sure that your Belknap celebrations taking place now are far from sleepy, but very much alive and vibrant. We do hope that your get-together proves to be a great blessing to you all. As we say in England, have a great time. Enjoy.